inside Forum Stadtpark. This is one of the venues for the Elevate Festival, and this year it's Elevate the Apocalypse. I'm sat next to your full title. You've got a lot of letters after your name, and there's probably some things before. Tell me who you are and your Twitter biography.
Well, I'm Stefan Rahmstorf, and I am a professor of physics of the oceans at Potsdam University, and I work as a climate scientist at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research.
You're here communicating primarily fact in some very pictorial ways. I say primarily fact because I unfortunately missed the beginning of what you were saying. I wanted to hear a little bit about you and the man. You might not think that's important, but you're doing a really, really brave thing right now, standing up and talking about what you believe in because it's your job. And there's a lot of people sitting on one side of a fence, a lot of people sitting on the other side of the fence when it comes to climate change. You were putting up one argument and then knocking it down, another argument, then knocking it down. Is there any arguments out there that are difficult to prove when it comes to climate change right now?
Well, the basic facts about climate change have been known for decades. We know that our emissions of greenhouse gases are heating up our climate, and we know that if we let this continue for too long, then we will cause major problems, extreme events, rising sea levels, all of which we can already observe. We measure that sea level has risen by 20 centimeters. We can see that the number of monthly heat records that are being broken around the world is now about five times as high as it should be in an unchanging climate.
Now, the theme of Elevate the Apocalypse, the title of this particular festival stroke conference, is meant to have, in many ways, a positive slant, the true meaning of lifting the veil on all of this. And your talk, for all its scary-looking statistics, had a positive ending, and that was, look, we understand what is happening, and humans are the issue here, which means we potentially can change all of this.
Yes, I always say that it's very good news that humans are changing the climate and that it's not due to some other factor like an increase in the brightness of the sun, for example, because if it were due to the sun, we couldn't do anything about it, and so we would be completely helpless. But because we are the cause of the current global warming, we can stop it. And we also have the technology to stop it. Economically, it's entirely affordable to stop it, as economic studies across the world clearly show. And the only issue is mustering the political will to actually get this transition to a sustainable energy system that we need.
What's the name of your blog?
I blog for realclimate.org, but also run a German blog together with some colleagues called Klima Lounge.
It's sometimes said that people will, you know, they kind of find it easier to blog a negative or angry comment over a comment of support or adding additional information. How are you finding your experience of taking your information into the social channels?
Well, we run a scientific blog which basically aims to explain and translate and discuss the state of climate science for a lay audience so that people can follow what's going on in the scientific community. I find when you look at the number of hits that our blog articles get that unfortunately when we criticize some nonsensical climate skeptics' claims, that gets the most hits, which I regret because I would have thought that discussing the actual serious science would be more interesting to people. But apparently the skeptics' debate seems to capture the imagination, and there is a real market out there, probably because the skeptics do a very good job in their PR machine to push out all these false claims and confusing arguments. And there is a genuine desire by many people to try and understand what is behind this. Is this true? Or people get this argument from their friends at a party or so, and they don't know how to answer it if they hear some funny claim like whatever volcanoes emit more CO2 than humans, which is just simply false. Humans emit about 100 times more CO2 than volcanoes. But the ordinary layperson doesn't know this stuff. And so if they hear it, and that claim actually is from this British TV movie, The Great Global Warming Swindle, which claimed that volcanoes emit more CO2 than humans. So TV watchers, they hear this and they think, God, is this true? And then, so there is a need for our blog to explain to people what the actual science is.
Then it's totally necessary that you're there breaking down some of the comments and media that is flying around in the public domain, because sometimes scientists seem to lock themselves away, get on with the facts, and don't get brave enough in some ways to face the public. There must be a lot of backlash. How do you deal with that?
Well, personally, I don't think of myself as brave at all. If you look at, firstly, people who work in authoritarian regimes or so, who really have something to fear by going out in the internet and engaging in a debate. Or if I think of the history of science, think of Galileo. You know, he said that the sun is in the center of our planetary system and not the Earth. And he got tried by the Catholic Church, and he got house arrest for the whole rest of his life, which is a major thing. And his book was banned for 200 years. It was on the index of forbidden books. So what do I have to fear? I have a very comfortable professorial position at a university. I have nothing to fear. I can't lose my job. And all I can fear is that there are some people out there who, you know, try to put you down, character assassination attempts or so, but I'm not too bothered by that, frankly.
Well, you're producing a huge body of work, not just through the blog. You've got a number of books out. You mentioned just a few titles to me earlier on. What's out at the moment, and what's exciting or interesting people?
Well, my most recent book that's available in English and is originally written in English is The Climate Crisis, that I wrote together with David Archer, who's a professor at Chicago University. And the idea behind that book is we all have probably heard about these reports by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, and these reports are a treasure trove of information, but they are 3,000 pages of the report in very hefty scientific language, and our idea was get the main findings and explain them in layman's terms, use the best graphs, scientific graphs, and also some very nice photography, by the way, to illustrate the thing and get it out there, and that's what the climate crisis does.
Well, I'm capturing a conversation here more than doing an interview in a journalistic sense, because I can't help but agree with the facts, which means I can't help but agree with you, and where possible, I like to reshare the articles and the information that leads me to think it might change people's minds. And I feel that it's now my duty to comment in a more positive manner, in a more supportive manner, on the blogs of people that are doing this good work, because you've kind of highlighted to me just how mobilised the skeptics are, and whatever the agenda may be, whether you believe there are, you know, powers that be behind the skeptics, or the skeptics are just sitting there thinking, well, you know, I get to keep all of this stuff if this is all false, and it's easier for us just not to do anything. I do think that if you do believe that there is an issue that is human-made with the climate, you need to do something positive about it, whether it is change your lifestyle, or whether it is share and disseminate the information you believe to be true. What are you doing personally, other than sharing information en masse and telling everybody?
Well, of course, I try to minimize my own carbon footprint personally as well. So we have really insulated our house state of the art and have solar energy. And of course, I get my electricity from an eco-energy provider in Germany. My family doesn't own a car. We carry our two children on the bikes, and my older one already bikes by herself now at the age of six. And we usually have our holidays within Germany, which is actually a very nice country to go on holiday, in the Baltic Sea or in the Bodensee, which is Lake Constance in the south. Or this autumn holidays, we were In the Ore Mountains, walking there. So
stop advertising and people will fly there.
That's right. I mean, you just have to be aware where does your largest emission footprint come from. And long-distance flying, obviously, is a very big factor that should be minimized. I'm not an angel in the sense that my job requires quite a bit of flying because to do it effectively, I do have to go to conferences. I try to really minimize that as well, but professionally, my emissions are certainly going to be higher than the average person's.
Mm. Personally, though, it sounds like you are leading by example. Anything coming out on the horizon we need to take a look for? I mean, you are on Twitter, so I guess you would share upcoming books and bits and bobs on there. Do you remember your Twitter name?
I think my Twitter name is probably just my surname, but I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. I mean, I usually... mostly I publish, of course, scientific papers. That's my main job as a scientist, and I don't advertise those ahead of time because we generally wait until it's peer-reviewed, which I think is a very sensible policy to not speak about scientific results before they are published in the journal, because only this publication in the journal then allows colleagues to criticize it. So when I come out with a scientific claim, any journalist should be able to contact any number of my colleagues and say, look, what do you think of this, what Ramsdorf is claiming there? And in order to judge this, they need to have the scientific paper to criticize a methodology or whatever. And that's why I generally don't disseminate claims before they're published.
That's why your Twitter account isn't used as much as most.
Well, I think that's just the lack of time, really, because this is the biggest problem is there are so many demands on the time. I try to keep up at the top of the league in terms of my scientific output, but at the same time, I advise the German government. I engage with the public in blogs, and I get a lot of journalists' requests for interview, and I get a lot of requests to give lectures to general audiences. And then, of course, I have a very beautiful family with two small children that I try to spend as much time with as possible. So then the extra time spent on Twitter, I just haven't found it yet.
Mm. Why here then? Why Graz? Why the Elevate Festival?
Well, I was attracted to this, first of all, because it was a combination of music, arts, and science, and politics. I mean, it's about the future and changing the world, which is quite unusual. I've never been to anything quite like it. And also, it seemed to be run and organized by young people who really are burning for the cause, and I like to support this kind of thing.
Stefan, thank you very much.
My pleasure.